Hi, welcome to the Pixel Punishers podcast. I am Tony Roseland, and across from me, our producer, Mr. Chase Warnick. What's up, Chase?
Hello.
And somewhere south of us, I guess, rather than north, is Mr. Barry Mack. What's going on, brother?
Hello, gang. It's nice to talk to you again.
It's been, what, a week, huh?
It has been a week.
What's happened in that week?
Plus a day.
Well, you know, because of Easter. So everybody was busy, so we put it off for a day. But good news is I got our podcast pushed through iTunes and Google and Spotify and all those sources. It's all been approved. Everything is good. So now when we're done, we upload it. It goes out to the world immediately. We don't have to wait on all the approval stuff again. So
we are moving onward and upward.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, slowly we'll get the kinks worked out. We ran into another big one tonight. We were supposed to have Gary Martin on the show, but we had some technical difficulties. We've got some fancy equipment. We couldn't figure out how to get one piece to talk to the other. So ultimately, we will get him back on next week. But so for tonight, they get us, you know.
That's okay. I mean, we got some mostly positive feedback last week about our inaugural episode.
Dude, we had a few hundred listeners, man, which is epic considering it's 1 week with a little tiny podcast with a couple of dudes sitting around drinking beers.
But you know what happened last week? I mean, we had a lot of very positive feedback about the show. People were saying that there are other podcasts in this space with interiors and architecture that are pretty stuffy. Sounds like, you know, they're talking to a room full of sixth graders. So we got really good feedback, said it, people thought it was funny. But we did get a piece of hate mail last week.
No.
I'm not lying. We got one piece of hate mail.
Any it did death come threats? Through.
No death threats in this one. It's
good. Dude, it's no, that's not good. Once we get a death threat, then we have arrived, dude. That's like bucket list type shit there. You get a death threat, man, you hit the big time, dude.
It's pretty good, though, to get some, you know, maybe it's not hate mail, but it's sort of like hate mail cloaked in
help. Can you read help, it? Can you read it to advice. Us? I'd like to hear this.
I have it handy on the screen here.
Okay.
Just to let you know up front that this came through at 8:23 on Saturday night, and I had 25 people at my house for my daughter's birthday / family Easter. So,
old's Lou? Eight. Lou turned eight.
Lou turned eight.
How was her birthday? So, good.
It was good, man. Yeah, her birthday lasted for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, she's eight, so.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to read this to you. Came through at 8:23. I was a little bit triggered because I had a couple glasses of wine, and I wanted to respond. But I just put a subtle little thing on IG and just let it go. But here it is. It says, I'm going to keep this anonymous. And the person that wrote this is probably never going to hear this because they're him or her, they're not happy with us. But let me read it. Hey, Barry, I just finished listening to your first podcast with Tony. Honestly, I really wondered whether I should even say anything. But I will, and you can consider it or not. My intention is to be helpful. After the first 5 minutes and the promise of vulgarity and nudity, I almost turned it off. But I'm not a prude, and I thought I'd listen to the whole thing to be fair. I had been seriously considering going to your workshop in May, but the way you guys positioned it on the podcast sounded more like Animal House than a professional workshop. Now, if that's the kind of photographer that you want to attend, then you're spot on with your advertising. If you want to draw a wider crowd, I hope you'll tone it down. Again, I'm really trying to be helpful. You're both very talented and successful and probably don't need my 2 cents, but I hope you'll consider it anyways.
Well,
sounds like something a mom would say.
Yeah, definitely. I don't even know how respond to that. What are your thoughts now that you haven't now that you haven't drank in several glasses of wine?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's hard to respond to this because Tony, how many we've sold out 5 or 6 workshops, we've had over 100 students, and if someone really actually out in the world thinks that there's a bunch of people running around with no pants on ripping bongs and doing keg stands, if that's really what you think is happening, I mean, my brain doesn't go to that place where I could even fathom that that's something that would be considered. I mean, this person needs, I'm not going to apologize for how we've positioned this workshop, but I'm going to say that have a sense of humor, honest to God. I don't even know what to say. I mean, I don't know what to say, Tony. I really don't. I can assure you, anybody that's come to the workshops, you know, I mean, there are other workshops out there that are run by senile old grandpas and stuff like that who have no clue what the fuck they're talking about. Pardon my French. But I can assure you that at our workshops, it's jam-packed full of information, and it's not a bunch of drunk people passed out without pants on.
I agree. I think the point of, you know, when we're doing that, we're trying to demonstrate that these are light, you know, they're lighthearted. They're not stuffy workshops. You don't have to be any skill level. You can come at any skill level. You can be fairly relaxed. You don't have to worry about being judged. Everybody's just there to have a good time and try to learn something. Our biggest issue is making sure people have multiple takeaways from our workshops. And I'm pretty sure you can ask anybody who's ever attended any one of our workshops that they definitely do. I mean, we make sure of that. We go around, we talk to everybody, make sure that we're answering questions, all that stuff. So, but
maybe it's not the swearing. Maybe it's the, it's, I mean, there's the reference here to, vulgarity, nudity. Oh yeah. There was even a really a message of the drinking here. I thought that maybe that was the trigger for this person, but, and we do kick every morning off with mimosas and Bloody Marys because why not? And we don't have a gun to your head, you know, like dunking your head in the punch bowl. If you don't want to have a mimosa and you just want to have a coffee, then do what you want to do. But there's people that like to have a morning cocktail to loosen things up, get the juices flowing. And again, if you choose to indulge or not, it doesn't matter to me, but it's there for the people that want to. And it seems to always be getting, people always remember that, you know, we always do a survey after the workshop and say, what was your favorite thing? And people are like, the Bloody Marys and the mimosas.
100%. So, yeah. And you know, the deal is with that is that for a lot of people, these are their vacations. You know, they're working all throughout the year and they take a vacation to wherever we do these workshops. They bring their families, a lot of people. And so they're missing out on the vacation portion of it. And so by starting the day off with a Bloody Mary or mimosa just helps them at least relax and enjoy the day a little bit so they're not feel like they're in a classroom or, you know, that kind of thing. We want it to be relaxed. We want you to have fun at these workshops. We want you to not be afraid to ask questions and interact. And if having a mimosa first thing in the morning helps lower some of those inhibitions, then that's great, you know. So I think that's enough on that. So whoever that was, I apologize if you feel offended. I promise you that you will not be disappointed if you attend one of our workshops by the information that you will take away. If profanity or drinking offends you, then yeah, maybe you will. You know, I don't know, but
I think nudity was just a joke.
Yeah, that's just a joke. I mean, that's only happened one time. I can't say that would happen every workshop.
That was your best-selling workshop ever.
Yeah, that was a freak thing, man. So
also, it's not even considered nudity if you're wearing socks, right?
That's true.
Right, especially where the sock was being worn. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on from that. Something new, and part of our technical difficulties here is we're doing all this through a Mac and through our Rodecaster Pro and, you know, all of these fancy high-tech gadgets. And we had Gary on the phone, on my phone, which is a new phone, which is a previous phone. Which I'm back. So last week I was on the Pixel, the Android phone, and now I'm back to an iPhone. Because everybody gave me so much grief about green bubbles versus blue bubbles that I couldn't stand it any longer. And so I went out today and I bought another iPhone. I bought an XS Max and here I am back to an iPhone. And so I love Android, native Android, which is on the Pixel 3. It doesn't have all the bloatware and all the crap from Samsung that goes on these things. It's so fucking good, man. It's so much better than iOS. I came back to iOS today and it feels like Fisher Price, my first operating system. It's so, you're so locked into what Apple wants you to do. And believe me, I'm an Apple fanboy. I drink the Kool-Aid. I have Apple everything, Apple underoos, you name it. I've got it. The problem is that with the iOS, I wanted something that could do more than what Apple was limiting me to. And Android, the native Android is so good, but people gave me so much grief about green bubbles, man. I didn't know that was such a big deal. It's not a big deal on my end, but everybody else freaking hated it, dude.
What do you want to do? You want to download torrents to your phone? What do you want to do that you can't do?
Here's an example. I'm staring at my phone right now. It's off, right? I mean, it's powered on, but the screen is black. What time is it?
Just give it a nudge, dude.
I have to touch it. Yeah, I have to touch it to see. My Android showed it all the time. If there's music playing in the background, guess what? Below that time, it just says who the song is and who it's by, and it's recording that. And later on, I can go back and look at a list of every song my phone has heard that day. And it's just always there. It's just doing its thing. I don't have to add that. It's not an app. It's not sandboxing rules or any of that
shit, though. It's like always listening.
Do you think that Siri... Hey, Siri! Yeah, do you think that Siri is not listening? Yeah, of course she is. So this is the same thing, but they're doing stuff with it that's helpful, that's useful. It's cool, man. It was so good. I love that operating system so much. But now I'm back to this thing, and I tell you what, they do such a good job of locking you into the Apple ecosystem with the iMessages and the AirDrop and all of the other bullshit that they get you on. It makes it really, really fucking hard to leave, man. So
not to mention that I don't have an international text plan up here. So you and I have been talking through Instagram Messenger for the last week.
Yeah, the Alibaba internet that you have up there, the discounted internet or phones plans that you have, they don't believe in competition in Canada. They're too polite to compete. So yeah, all of compete. The phone carriers offer the exact same plans. Not one of them would step up and go, hey, we're going to offer unlimited texts like every phone plan in America, because that would throw the other phone company off up there. So who do you have? Rogers and Bell. Neither of them want to take that step, that leap, and throw the other one off kilter, which would just plummet their income. So yeah. It's insane to me. That happened, what, here, 10 years ago? Every phone started offering unlimited texting, and I mean, it's insane.
Yeah,
they don't have that. Well, there are some third party carriers like Wind Mobile and Kudu, but they all piggyback off of the major networks, and they will offer you aggressive plans, but they only have shitty Android phones, and I don't want an Android phone.
Oh, dude, you're missing out. You don't even know what you're missing out on. It's so good. So I even had the Pixel Book, which is Chromebook version of dude, it's so nice. It's still here. It's going back. So the Pixel What's is the going Pixel back, Book? And the Pixel Book is it's their version of the iPad / laptop.
Oh, God. Did you buy those the same time you bought your Android?
I bought it like few days later, dude. It's so good.
And once you get rid of the phone, you can't use the others.
No, you can still use it. But I'm either all in or I'm all out, dude. I'm not going halfway.
I'm balls deep or I'm not even
exactly.
In there.
Exactly. So it's dude, I'll show it to you later. It's super nice. The Pixel Book is gorgeous. It's super thin. You know, it works with all the Google apps. It works with your Pixel phone. It's all tied together. It's all Google. It's their own little ecosystem, but you can do other shit with it than just the stuff that they allow. So anyway, it's all going back. I'm back on iOS, and here I am, and people don't like green bubbles, so I'm back, and that's it. That's Tony's rant for the week.
I wouldn't have minded if I could figure it out, but I would text you, and like you wouldn't get it till 4 days later.
Because you would send it through, it would go to iOS, it would go on the messages.
iOS email address you gave me, whatever it was.
It kept going to iOS, and that's the problem, is people kept texting me, and it was going to iOS, because I kept iOS, like iMessages on my Mac. And so I would come in the studio in the morning and I'd have like 30 messages from like my mom and you and all kinds of other people. And like, you know, so that just sucks. And I wasn't getting them on the phone because people were sending them through that had iPhones, and it was just driving me nuts. So enough of this. That's Tony's rant for the week. So it seems to be a pattern. We start out every week with a rant from me, but that's it for the week. So
do you want to, should we talk briefly about the EOS R? Because I did have an opportunity to test drive mine this week for probably a good 30 hours. And I've got some observations.
Sure, Johnny come lately. Let's do that.
Well, Tony, I didn't have my trigger, I told you. So.
All right, let's hear Barry's review on the Canon EOS R. Let me open up another Bodhisattva here, and let's.
So the
sorry, the battery, whoever's listening that doesn't like drinking, I'm drinking beer during a podcast.
Yeah, so. The battery, as we talked about last week, the battery goes in very nice. The battery door has a nice click to it, so those are all positives.
Very tactile,
slides. Yeah, in very quite tactile. Nice.
Yep. So the shooting experience with it, focus peaking is friggin' amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I've ever lived without that because I've always composed both with EOS Utility and Live View, but seeing the focus peaking on the screen has been amazing. I didn't get my trigger in time, but I found a workaround with these adapters from Amazon, and I didn't find out until my third shoot of the week that the jack can't actually be all the way into the camera with it. So what was happening was I couldn't, if I was triggering using the remote in my hand, I couldn't adjust the camera settings using EOS Utility. I'd have to do it right on the camera, and it basically kept the shutter half to press the whole time. So all my triggers were active the whole time. They were chewing through batteries. So I was a little upset, but then I figured out later in the week that if I pulled that cable out just a little bit, everything was normal. And then I actually have the proper cable now. So
usually when you pull on things, they tend to operate better than when you just,
this is true. If you wiggle them or bang them or pull them halfway out, usually that's what you have to do. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that's bothering me about it is, I just bought a new laptop this week, so I don't have the proper cable to connect the camera. So I've been using the EOS Utility in Wi-Fi mode. And when you have the EOS R, and it might have been like this with the 5D4, I don't know because I didn't tether wirelessly, but the whole time you have a wireless connection going, that read write button on the back, it flashes constantly, and it's really fucking irritating. So I wish it was just like a, it beeped it, you know, a little blink every 3 seconds to let you know it's connected, but it's just like blink, 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 blink all goddamn day. And it bothers me. I mean, I'm easily triggered, as you can tell.
How fast was the wireless connection? Was it reusable or what?
So it was all dependent on how close the camera was, obviously, to the laptop. But for live view focusing, there was a little bit of latency, maybe like a quarter of a second. And then the file transfer after you had pressed the shutter, they imported probably within 2 seconds, so this wasn't too bad, but it was really nice. Like, I was able to walk around and do like propping and stuff, and I just brought my laptop on the stand and then I would just do the propping and everything in live. And the latency, depending on, obviously the further away you got, the latency was a little worse, but I don't even know if I'm ever going to use a wired connection because it does work pretty good. It's just that friggin' blinking drives me nuts.
Now, what I remember from the 5D4 shooting to the iPad was that you could set what was transmitting, whether it was the RAW file or the JPEG. And if you only transmitted the JPEG, it was really quick to come up on screen. I don't know if the laptop version of EOS Utility works the same way, if you can designate what is actually being transferred or not. In other words, JPEG. I captured RAW to the card and JPEG went to the iPad. Can you do that with the laptop version?
I'm pretty sure there's probably an option there. I didn't really spend too much time with that. I just set up something that worked and I went through my shoots, and then I was a little frustrated at certain points of time, but once I like the, so I had a shoot Monday and then I had one Wednesday and then I didn't quite finish up. So I went back Thursday to finish that shoot, and it was clicking on Thursday. Everything was running perfectly smooth and I was having a great time, but I'm friggin' loving this camera, and those CR3 files are really nice, except I'm noticing that my iMac, which is a little long in the tooth, is starting to choke on these CR3 files, which are the same files that were the same size that were from the Mark IV, but with the, I don't know if it's because of the camera RAW 3 or whatever it is, or the Canon RAW 3 version 3, if that's slowing it down, but the files are freaking beautiful.
You liking them?
Oh man, it's amazing.
How's the noise?
It's good. I pulled almost 2.5 stops out of one just to see, and I had to turn the noise reduction up to like 70, but it was clean. I noticed that the grays, the midtones, are a lot nicer than they were on the Mark IV, but certainly not as nice as the 5D Mark II. Technology hasn't quite caught up yet.
Good God. Well,
but it's nice, man. And
what lens? So you had to be using the 24-105, right?
Yeah, I was using the...
Did you use the adapter with the tilt shifts?
Yeah, I was using mostly EF lenses. I think I did 3 or 4 shots with the 24-105 because I really wanted to compress things. But the most recent shot I put on Instagram, I shot at like 92 mils with that RF 24-105, and it's friggin' amazing.
It's sharp, dude. It's so good.
Two or three people messaged me on IG this week, and they're like, I'm dumping my Nikon, I'm getting an EOS R. Should I get the 16-35 or the 17-40? So it sounds like a lot of people are interested in it, and I love it a lot more than my Mark IV. That's for damn sure.
Don't buy either of those. Wait, they're coming out with the 15-35 RF lens here this year. So if you can hold out, wait to make the transfer. Wait to make the move until they release those new lenses, because that's going to be. I mean, so far every RF lens is sharper than any EF lens. So if you can wait for the 15-35 RF, you're going to be better off than buying a 16-35 or a 17-40 EF lens.
Or you can just dump that thing. Just sell it.
What, the later on?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the only problem is everybody else is going to be doing the same thing, dude, because they're all going to want to be getting into that 15-35 RF as well. So this market's going to be saturated. You're going to not get top dollar for your sale that you just bought. You're going to be upside down and all pissed off and... just a little forethought, man, you know?
Yeah. You could pick up some lenses for that 5D Mark II, man.
Exactly. So, speaking of lenses, we got a nice new lens sitting in front of us here.
It's a beast.
What do you think, Chase?
It's like solid, man.
Talk to us. Give us the rundown on it.
It's the Sigma 18-35 T2 Cine lens.
So the deal with these is they say it's their art lenses in a Cine body, which is fine because the art lenses are beautiful. But so we picked this up because I hit 6,500 subscribers on YouTube this week somehow.
That's impressive, Tony. Bravo.
Considering that I don't hardly ever post anything and everything that I've posted has been so hodgepodge together. The audio has been shit. The color's all over the place, you know, but I guess the subject matter is decent enough. But a lot of that is because I'm constantly switching gear around. So what I've decided to do is in this year, I'm going to start to try to do a YouTube video every week along with this podcast. And I wanted to get some consistent gear. So I've jumped into a C100 Mark II and this Sigma 18-35 Cine lens, which is almost a parfocal lens, they say. So, you know, that means that if you don't know what parfocal is, it means that you can set your focus, you can rack your zoom, and it should stay in focus through the whole zoom range. This is almost a parfocal lens. So as you get towards the extreme ends of the zoom range, you'll start to lose focus. But for the most part, you're dialed pretty well. Having said that, the best videos, the most consistent videos I did were back in the day, back in 2010, 2011, when Chase was with me and he was running the camera and doing the editing. So now that Chase is back around and he's going to help with some of this stuff, I'm hoping that with this consistent gear and with Chase behind the camera, we can start to put out some more consistent videos. I'm having new lighting put in the studio, all 5,000 Kelvin, so that everything is one color temperature. It'd make post a lot easier, and we'll use this lens, and it should be pretty rad. So this is like new lens and camera week for both of us. I'm pretty stoked on this thing.
Yeah, that's nice.
Was this an impulse buy? I mean, it's the price range seems like it's an impulse buy.
Yeah. He did text me one night and go, I'm getting this.
Yeah, it was a total impulse buy.
If it means I get to play with it, why not?
This 18-35 is what, like four grand, I think?
I impulse bought a... Yeah. Oh,
fuck. That's a $4,000. The C100 Mark II is like $3,000. So, yeah, between those two, it's... And then I also got another toy.
If it makes you feel any better, Tony, I impulse bought a set of bed sheets and pillowcases last week.
That does. No, you bought something else, man. What else did you get this week? Come on.
I bought a laptop, but that was an impulse. All right. That was an impulse.
I know it was an impulse, but tell us about your laptop. What do you got?
So I
latest Microsoft Windows machine?
No, I didn't get Surface Pro? No, I did not. So for those that don't know, I had a late 2015 MacBook Pro. It was pretty jacked. It didn't have its independent video card. It had that Iris, whatever it was. Either way, it couldn't run Photoshop. You're never gonna believe it. A photographer that has a fucking laptop that won't run Photoshop. So it was basically the world's most glorified tether machine. So I could just tether to it, and I could go on the internet if I wanted to, and that was pretty much it. And it was like,
so it was a Chromebook.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it was like a $3,000 Chromebook with a MacBook sticker on it. So anyways, this piece of shit was giving me problems, and the bar where the monitor mounted to the keyboard, it used to get so hot you couldn't even touch it. Like, that thing was a lemon. So I ended up getting rid of that, and then Tony was pushing me to buy the most jacked MacBook Pro in the world with an external 5K. And Against his wishes, I went and bought an entry-level MacBook Pro 13-inch, and I'm going to buy a jacked-up iMac, and it's going to come out in the wash in terms of price. So I really, I don't like to retouch on a laptop because I'm so used to using a 27-inch iMac. So I did buy a 13-inch MacBook Pro 2018.
It's wait a nice little unit. And you didn't tell me it was a 13-inch. You bought a 13-inch?
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah. Does it have the touch bar? Did you go with the one without the touch bar?
No touch bar.
Oh, you went serious base model.
Oh, dude, I went as base as it would go. But Best Buy had a $250 off this week, which is pretty much unheard of for Apple to discount like that. So it was $1,529 Canadian, which is like, I don't know, $65 US. So you could just buy a whole shitload of them if you wanted to.
Jesus. And, so basically you bought a 2016 laptop in 2019.
That's not even accurate.
That's essentially what you bought.
It's not even true.
So we're great with that 5D Mark II.
It'll be perfect. It probably has USB ports like regular.
Guys,
USB
I'm going to unplug my mic here.
It's got USB ports. Come on, tell me. Come on.
It has two USB-C ports on the side.
What about regular USB ports?
None, man. None. Dude, this is the future. This is,
come on.
This is a 2018.
How are you going to tell them the 5D too?
I'm going to have to buy a dongle.
All right. So, hey, cables, man. Buy cables. Don't buy dongles. For the price of the dongle, you can buy two Cable Matters cables. They're fantastic, dude.
You can't get that shit up here. I was on Amazon last night for 3 hours looking for cables. We don't have Cable Matters up here,
well,
man.
Well, next time you're here, to bring them last you can time. Smuggle them up your ass like a mule back to Canada. We'll buy them here and have them next day from Amazon or something.
So. Somehow we talk about smuggling things in my ass on every episode.
Hopefully
that can keep going.
Don't just, you know, I hate to tear up a company, but I've had nothing but problems with Tether Tools. You've been with me and their cables have failed.
It's
a problem, dude. And they're like $50-$60 a cable because they're orange, man. And people, anytime I see in a forum, people are like, what's the best cable? People instantly, Tether Tools. Bullshit. I got a bin of them over here. They're all broke, man.
The orange is nice, but it's not nice when they break.
The orange is nice because people see them. They don't trip over them. But I've got a Rubbermaid thing full of them that are all dead over here that I can't use. Now, given props to their customer service, I tweeted one time that I had a cable break on set, and they overnighted one to me and replaced it, which is great. But I don't want to talk to customer service. I don't want the product to break. Yeah. And they're expensive for that. So I've been trying to use Cable Matters. Well, I started using Cable Matters, which were like $8 on Amazon, and they've worked perfect. I've never had any problem. They're made in wherever, in Indonesia or China or something, but they freaking work, and they're just as fast. They make 1,000 different cables, so you got to make sure you're buying the right speed or whatever. But I got an email the other day that the marketing person from Tether Tools actually moved over to Innovative, which is interesting because Innovative is doing some cool shit these days.
Speaking of that, Tony, sorry to cut you off. I don't want to lose this. I don't want the train to go off the rails again, but I want you to describe to me the one time where the rep from Tether Tools was demonstrating a speed light holder at one of our workshops. Can you describe that to our audience?
I think she might have been the owner.
Oh, shit. The owner of Tether Tools?
I don't know. I think she was, or one of the senior people. Yeah, came to one. They sponsored one of our workshops. God bless them. That's awesome. Thank you for doing that. And now I'm going to tear you a new asshole. But she came and was demonstrating those stick-on things for the speed lights that stick onto the walls. And she stuck one onto the wall with a speed light. And one of my speed lights during the workshop stuck it onto the wall to show how great these things stick. And it fell right off the wall while she was talking to all the students about how awesome this thing is and how it sticks to the wall. So if you don't have a stand or you need to get a light in a unique place, it's got this like a 3M type of a 3M command stick type of thing.
Like command strips.
And you slap it to the wall and you can put these speed lights anywhere and stuff. So she does that with one of my speed lights and she's talking to the students about giving them like a promo code for the thing or something. And kablam, it falls off the wall behind me, speed light bouncing, batteries flying out and shit. And Barry and I just looked at each other. We're like, well, you're not selling any of those today. It was too bad, man. I felt horrible for her because, you know, freak accident. And to her credit, I didn't say this to anybody, and I didn't want to draw any more attention to the thing than we had to. But she stuck it on like a a folding whiteboard set of doors that were made out of wood that were like glossy and had been pledged to high hell. So they were,
so it had a sheen on it.
It had like a layer of funk on to, yeah, exactly. And she decided to slap it onto that. And I'm like, that's probably not a good idea. Turns out
wasn't
a good idea. So, but they're probably fine in reality, but the demonstration went fucking sideways really, really fast. Yeah. And so I don't think anybody that was in our workshop is buying those from them, but,
that's funny.
And then the other thing, remember the other Tether Tools thing, dude, the guy was with us in Arizona. We were out at the, what was that big center that we did? The museum with
The Museum of the West?
No, the other place we did.
The art place, Performing Arts.
The Performing Arts Center, whatever. And they brought the tether tray, and the guy hooks it onto the tripod leg with their arm and stuff, like their version of the magic arm. And he's got the laptop on there, and we're shooting with it. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing caves, and my laptop goes swinging down up underneath the tripod. Fortunately, it was strapped to the tray, so it didn't slam onto the floor. But the whole thing... Yeah, this is their tether tray or whatever it is, So it came swinging down, and I'm like, oh, dude, And, of course, everybody, every student is gathered around, which made it another one. It was like, really, another snafu? I don't remember if that was the same workshop, the same class or not, but that was, two times that they've had problems in our workshop demonstrating gear. And I'm like, okay, we're not going to have these guys at the workshop anymore because – I think we're not helping their business. We're hurting it just by having, I don't know if we're bad luck or what's happening, but we decided that, hey, we're not going to have those guys there anymore because I don't think that we're doing them any favors. So, their products are fine. Their cables seem to go bad. The rest of their stuff is fine. But having said that, Innovative, dude, their stuff is rock solid. I've got the Innovative cart and the Innovative, trays and all that stuff that I use, and that stuff is really, really good. In fact, I'm saying this, I'm an ambassador for the brand, obviously, but I'm not saying it because I'm an ambassador, or the other way around. Actually, I'm an ambassador because I like the product, but I'll throw my discount code down in our show notes now that we've talked about it, and you guys can save 15% on all their shit, but they make some good stuff. The thing about Tether Tools is that I find a lot of their stuff is just rebranded from other manufacturers. They're not developing a lot of this stuff themselves. They're just taking other people's stuff and rebranding it, which, I mean, there's plenty of vendors out there that do that, but the markup is ridiculous from Impact or any of these, third-party companies that they're rebranding this stuff. And it's just not my jive. So I know we'll get hate mail. Barry, we had hate mail last week. We'll definitely get hate mail this week because people are diehard Tether Tools. They love it. But
have you used any USB-C cables from them?
Yeah. It was USB-C to USB-3 or something like that. And, half of it is not their problem because USB-3 sucks so bad. Yeah. What a shitty design. Whoever came up with that should be shot. USB-C 1,000 times better, which is, I'm happy that they've come out with that now. So,
yeah.
I've heard that USB-C goes janky over time too from someone, but I don't know about that.
I've never had any issues yet. I think the most brilliant thing that Apple, see, we should have had Gary on this one. We got so much Apple conversation going on. To make Thunderbolt 3 backwards compatible with USB-C, make the same connector and everything. I think that's genius. Now we can have one port on our computers that does everything. Mm-hmm. I love that. And yours are Thunderbolt. Are both your ports Thunderbolt, Barry? They are, right?
They should be. I'm not sure.
Yeah, if it's a MacBook Pro and has USB-C, it's Thunderbolt 3.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did that on all of them. So
the only one that's not is the MacBook, I think. MacBook Air is Thunderbolt 3, but the MacBook is just USB-C.
Yeah. So you had a shoot this week. How did it go?
It went good. I had a few shoots. So the Monday I shot, it was like a high-end vision center. So my one interior design client did it, and she did an amazing job. She's into this super dark and dramatic. She's one of the projects I shot for has got huge traction. This dark, dark kitchen. It's on my website, but she did a really great job with this place. So we did, it was a full day. I think I ended up shooting 9 shots plus, a few lifestyle portrait type shots of her. And then the next shoot was supposed to be one day, but I was actually a little bit bogged down by trades coming in and out of the house, and then fumbling around with trying to figure out the EOS Utility was a model home that I shot for my client called Millstone Homes. And I actually talked to him tonight about being a guest on this podcast, because he has the craziest story, one of the craziest, most inspirational stories you've ever heard. He's agreed to be on the podcast. We're going to have him on a future episode. But he came here from Eastern Europe in a shipping container. He shipped himself to Canada. So he was homeless. He didn't speak English. And the dude has taught himself everything. He runs this. He's hoping to hit $1 billion in sales in the next year for his company. And he came here in a fucking shipping container.
Wow.
So it's his story is like some of the craziest stuff ever. And I got him actually to speak at my workshop last year, and like people were super emotional at what he's achieved. And he's all about just bringing everybody up. He wants to build these like nice, super modern attached homes under the $400,000 mark, because housing in Ontario where I live is starting to get pretty out of control. So a lot of young families can't afford to even have a house. So there's this big problem with a shortage of homes and renters and stuff like that. So he's like, I just want to make people, you know, I want to build homes that look amazing and that are functional and that people can actually afford. And he's like, I just want to inspire people. And he's one of the coolest dudes ever. But yeah, I shot his model this week, and everything I shoot for him is amazing. He's always like 2 or 3 years ahead of the trends of what's happening. So this house had the mudroom was hidden behind cabinet doors, and the pantry was hidden. So when you look at the kitchen, it just looks like a big bank of cabinets, but there's actually these secret rooms that go in behind. So
I saw super that cool. on your live stream. That did look pretty dope. They looked just like a bank of cabinets. Huh. And then all of a sudden you're in a whole nother room.
Yeah, and then he does like the stuff on like the hardwood, like the planks he uses are like a foot wide, probably wider than a foot, and then they're like 12 feet in length. So he's just like, there's all these like sort of minute, like little details that no one else is doing. And like, he doesn't even the cold air return vents, he doesn't have like a shitty, like steel cold air return vent. They actually do slots with like, it looks like a circular saw or something. So they do slots in these big tall baseboards. So it's like super low key and it's just integrated right in. And just, there's just so many little things that he does that are amazing. And he's the best guy ever. So look out for that episode. It'll probably be in the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. We'll get him on, and you're not going to want to miss it, because the guy's story is friggin' incredible.
Yeah, I want to hear about his venture in the shipping container. That's amazing, dude.
That's nuts, man. Like, they almost died at sea. He has a book called The Grinding of the Millstone, where he writes about his experience of leaving. I think he was from Romania, and they had to actually cut a port in the side of the container. It was him and three other guys, I think. And the way that they had no way to know how the containers are going to be stacked on the ship. And if they had been stacked side to side, they wouldn't even be able to open their airport. But luckily, it was stacked where it was facing out. So they could open it every morning and look out and see the sea and stuff. And then I think once they got into Canadian waters, they actually... he came to port in Halifax, but once they were in Canadian shipping waters, they were able to identify themselves to the captain or whatever. And then I guess they have to provide like the food and
asylum and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So yeah. Pretty crazy, man. It's an amazing, amazing story.
And wow. I can't wait to hear that, dude. That's awesome. How's his English? Is it going to be, are people going to be able to understand him on a podcast?
No, he's good, man. He's all good.
All right.
Good. I think he speaks a whole bunch of different languages. So, but yeah, his English is good. And he's funny as shit. Like he's just a straight shooter, and he's a great guy, man. It's going to be a good one.
He's probably 1,000 times smarter than all of us combined. So
definitely.
Cool. Well, right on. That's good. So we got him lined up. We got Gary lined up. We got a marketing guy lined up. We've got a food. I've got a really big food shooter that I'm reaching out to that I think will be with us. We've got a lot of different stuff coming up here. It's going to be a cool season. We got some tech episodes we want to talk about, like our favorite tech. We got some of our favorite apps that we use. We've got, speaking of tech, didn't you just say you built some crazy Hackintosh or something?
Yeah, I upgraded my Hackintosh to an 8-core 16 thread Intel 9900K. It's the top of the line processor in the new iMac.
Does it have a flux capacitor?
It might.
So does it have to be the same hardware that's in the Macs to work? Because not their the software same exact would only hardware. Recognize that stuff, the chips? Or?
I mean, it has to be an Intel-based processor. And there are Hackintoshes out there with the AMD Ryzen processor, which is a different kind of So it's not Intel, but
how does the Mac OS recognize that though? Doesn't it need the stuff that's in it, one of the produced Macs to work?
Out of the box, yeah. Well, like, but there are people that have coded this stuff by hand to come up with these text files to make certain hardware work with it. So, like, you have to have a compatible motherboard that somebody has dedicated, you know, 20 hours into coding it into the software in order for it to work. So
you're far geekier than I thought you were, man.
Yeah, Chase, you look like you'd be handy with a soldering iron.
I've never soldered anything.
Oh, well, you just look like that. I mean, when I'm looking at you right now, and I'm just thinking that I can just picture you with a soldering iron.
Bunch of comic books and a soldering iron.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know what I'm really into right now? This is crazy. There are a lot of people femdom? Out on the YouTubes. No, not I'm not into femdom. But
I've seen your wife. She can kick your ass.
Yes, she could beat the shit out of me, hands down, guaranteed. But I am fascinated recently, and I might quit photography actually to start my own YouTube channel of restoration. There's people out here restoring like old drills and gumball machines and like create just people are finding shitty stuff on the street and they make it look brand new. And I am so fascinated. I'm going to get myself a sandblaster and a drill and a lathe, and I'm gonna restore stuff, and that's gonna be my new career.
I saw a video of someone restoring a pair of $300 Yeezy sneakers that they found in a ditch somewhere.
I mean, restoration's big.
They were just like caked in mud, and someone cleaned them off and repainted the soles and everything like that, and they look brand new.
Oh man,
Tony, I'm gonna send you some links, dude, because it is fascinating. They have these like pits, they have these like bins that they fill up with like concoctions of chemicals, and then they like strap wires to it and it bubbles, and then all the rust is gone, and then they like powder coat shit.
Yeah, I've seen, I mean, like Discovery and Nat Geo and stuff has had shows. There was a dude that was like restoring like Coke machines and stuff. I forget what the name of that was. Do you remember that dude? He had like cut off denim shirt, and he was always like repairing like old, like he would take an old like pedal car or whatever and like restore that. And anyway, I reached out to him. Huge. It was a big show on like, I can't remember, it was Nat Geo Discovery. American
American Pickers or anything.
No, it was one of those type of shows though. So I reached out. He has a website. I reached out, and I was trying to get, I bought my dad these darts, you know, darts, throw darts like at a bar, right? Yeah. So they used to have these scoreboards for darts. They're three dials, and you use them for 301 or 401, which is basically a subtraction game. So you start with 301, and you have to subtract whatever you hit from the dials, right? And they were all interlocked, kind of like a clock or a timepiece where you turn one dial and the others turn. And so you could turn one dial, and it would make a subtraction. It would do the math for you based on gears.
It's a calculator.
Yeah, it was basically a calculator, right? So this was in all the dart halls a long time ago, and he had those growing up. And when I was a kid, he used to go play in leagues and things like that. And so you can't find them anymore because all the dart places in the world are shut down. Yeah, it's all digital. All these places are long gone. So I found these at an auction house like in Europe somewhere one year, and I bid and I won, and they shipped them. And they came here, and I gave them to my dad for Christmas one year. Yeah. Blew his mind. You know, hopefully one of the best gifts he's ever gotten.
Nice.
But before I did that, I wanted to have them restored or keep one original and one restore, you know, that kind of thing. So I reached out to this guy. I was willing to pay whatever, you know, to have it done. But the delay was like 8 months to get a bid. Shit. Not to get the work done, to get the bid. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah, I think I was busy as hell.
Yeah. So Barry, if you go into that, I'll just like work for you doing bids or something like that, because we're going to be rich. You'd be 8 months out just on bids before you even have to do any work.
Dude, you should see the views. There's like a guy restored, like, what was it? It was like a table vise, and it's got like 7.6 million views. What, in the
what's
last
the
month.
Website? We'll bring it up.
I don't know the website. There's a bunch that I got to check my bookmarks, my YouTube bookmarks, but all I watch these days, I fall asleep to the soothing sounds of restoration, and it's weird. There's no music. There's no talking. It's just like just watching the dude restore stuff. But when they speed up certain segments, like when they're hammering and sandblasting, the soothing sounds are nice.
Wow. It's ASMR, right? Really,
like, it is big time.
They have the Game Boy is 30 years old this week.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Game Boy, I watched the Game Boy be restored this week.
Restoring the original Game Boy restoration project.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Odd Tinkering, is that the name of the site?
Yeah, there's one like called Renew and Restore is another one I've been watching. And oh man, I'll send you some links, but it's
we'll post them in the show notes. We'll post them in the show notes, dude. The Game Boy, how about that, dude? Huh? I watched MKBHD do with Casey Neistat this week. He did like this retro thing on YouTube where they went back. He did this whole YouTube Originals retro thing on the Game Boy. They fucking flamethrowered this thing, like strapped it on their back and hit it, blasted it like 12 times, melted the Game Boy, could still press the power button. The thing kicked on, bling, you know, that sound that everybody, all of our generation knows from the Game Boy. And the thing's still fired up, man. That's crazy. I mean, they don't build shit like that anymore. But
remember the Game Gear, the Sega Game Gear,
and you could put it.
I had one. It had a color screen, and then it had a TV tuner with a big, long, like extendable, and you could pick up like local TV stations on the thing. But I also jerry-rigged mine to set it up to play. I had a connection to my. My VCR, and when I went to summer camp, I smuggled my VCR in my bag. And my mom's like, "Why is that? Why are you struggling with that bag?" And I was like, "I brought my VCR and like five of my favorite movies." And then whenever we went to bed at night, I hooked up I jerry-rigged the VCR to play into my Game Gear, and everybody's sleeping, and I'm watching VHS cassette tapes.
Jesus.
Well, I remember VHS.
Oh man, we went beta at first, which didn't work out. No. So we ended up with a VHS ultimately. But
wasn't beta superior though? Like it's kind of like the battle between Blu-ray and HDD.
Android and iOS. Yeah, I get it. I feel you. Yeah. So let's see. We probably should have some sort of topic for this week rather than just us rambling. So I had an interesting thing this week. I had a client, so I do a bunch of headshots. SpokaneHeadshots.com is a sister site that I have, and people
subtle plug.
Yeah, I'll post a link, but I don't think our listeners need headshots. But
it's only useful in Spokane.
Anyway. Yeah. So, but just so that they understand what we're talking about here, that's where I started. You know, back in the day, working with my dad in the studio, started in the lab printing proofs, this, and that, and the other. Moved into headshots. Long story short, I've done a ton of them. And I still do here in the studio. I try to book them all in one day so it doesn't take up my whole week. But I shot a bunch of them this week, 8, I think, and all in one day. And the last one was a woman. She's a realtor, and she walks in and says that her cousin normally shoots all her photos and that she doesn't let anybody take her photos but her cousin, because her cousin always gets them right. And I said, "Oh, well, where's your cousin's studio?" "Well, she doesn't have a studio. We shoot everything on location because she likes to move and be creative.
Be free."
Oh, boy, one of those.
Right. And then I had her sit down in the chair, you know, in the stool, and she's going, "Well, there's a lot of lights here. Do you not know how to use natural light?" And I'm just thinking, oh, shit, and we're off to a good start, you know. And so, you know, I explain the point of having a studio, being able to control the light and this and that and the other. And it didn't seem to convince her. So, I took a bunch of shots. She was dedicated to tell me what her best side was and how she looked best on camera. And clearly everything regurgitated from what her cousin told her. Didn't want to listen. I'm trying to get her to relax. I'm trying to get her to pose the way I want her so that I can get at least some decent shots of this woman. She was dead set on like defying me. I don't know why. So I, you know, in the end, I think there's one or two that could work. And really all you need is one shot, right? It's a headshot session. You need one that you like, one that looks good.
It's not a senior photo session.
Exactly. So, ultimately we got up and she says, first thing out of her mouth, "What happens if I don't like any of them?"
Oh,
she hasn't seen them yet. You know, I'm like, Jesus. So, I told her, I said, "Well, then we figure out what the problem was, what you didn't like about them, and we'll bring it back in and try to fix it, you know?"
And was so she not was reviewing like, them on the camera or on
no,
the laptop?
No, I didn't do that. I don't do that. I don't want to distract people when I'm shooting headshots. Usually I take a couple and then I show them one so that they get an idea for how they're looking, and they look so fucking good.
You used to shoot those tethered. Do you not shoot them tethered anymore?
No, I do this way. So I shoot them, I show them on the camera, the back of the camera. They look awesome, of course.
Yeah, you know, it's
because, yeah, you know, everything looks awesome at 2 inches, right? So then And they go, oh, wow, that's really great. Yeah, I look great. And so then they're comfortable. They relax instantly in front of the camera, and then I start getting the good stuff, right? Yeah. That's how it works. So, you know, I did that with her, and she was like, you know, can you move the big vein out of my forehead and all this kind of shit, you know? Anyway, so then we just kept shooting, and I'm trying to get her to do what I want her to do, and she's trying to move to the other side and get me to move the lights to the side where she's got her part. I mean, just, everything was just not working the way that I wanted it to. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is because I wanted to ask you if you've ever had a client that has asked for a reshoot or a refund or not been happy with the photos or whatever, because the criteria for that, I have a very specific set of criteria in which I'll do a reshoot. And I'm just curious with you and Chase, because Chase has done quite a bit of photography too.
You even had to do a reshoot because of me, I think.
Did I?
I like deleted an entire job of yours. You don't remember that?
Oh, yeah. Same client.
Was it?
Same client, dude. Yes, they're still using me amazingly. But yes, same client. That was the initial shoot where we shot like the whole office. Yeah. I told him it was technical difficulties, but yeah. Yeah, because you didn't back up, man. There's a reason we have a backup strategy on location. And I was out of town, and Chase and the assistant photographer went out and shot this thing and decided that I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, and they weren't going to back up on location. So they came back to the studio, and then when they tried to copy the files of the server, he accidentally deleted everything, and then we had nothing. And so when I got back from vacation, they told me about this foobar, and I had to call the client and have a reshoot done of half their staff, which was ridiculous. So there's a reason that I have backup policies in place, and it's not because I think I'm smarter than you. It's because I've already made these mistakes before. That's why we have them. But anyway, Barry, what do you got, man? What is your criteria? Have you ever had anybody reach out about that?
I've never had to do a reshoot ever in my whole career. I mean, I've had to do some retouching revisions, but never a full reshoot. But that's funny that we bring this up on today's episode, because one of the photographers that came to my workshop last year from Toronto, his name is Ryan Fung. You can find him on Instagram. He does good work. He called me today to ask about some third-party licensing where something had happened with the cost-sharing model, and one of the parties wanted to license stuff after the fact, and I told him you got to spank him, like Tony says. Anyways, I asked him what he was up to. He said, I'm shooting for this company who wants me to shoot long corridors and stuff. I'm shooting wallpapers and sconces and paint and finishes, and I'm wondering if you have any ideas for how to light this stuff. And I said, it's actually funny that you bring that up, because several years ago I was part of Brandon Barry's he basically had a thing called Barry Studio, where he had a roster of photographers that he would hire us out for work, and he would take a cut and open some doors. But I had a job, and I never had to do a reshoot, but this is actually the only job I did and never got paid for. So I got hired to shoot these three condo buildings in Toronto, and he sent me some sample photos. They want like long wide shots with sort of off center, not dead on one points, where it shows some of the door and the trim and the carpet and the wallpaper. And honestly, I did a really good job on it. Like it was dog shit material. The subject matter was terrible. But I delivered them, and the client came back to Brandon and said, these are,
I remember this, dude.
They're like the worst photos we've ever seen. Yeah. And they're,
yes, they're, I remember this.
He said, they're unusable. And I said, unusable. I'm like, I can tweak any bit of that in post. What's unusable about them? And they're like, the compositions are shit and everything's shitty. And I was like, I literally like had reference photos that I was trying to duplicate in the field. And it's the only job, actually, and it was a pretty juicy job, and it was the only thing that I've ever been burned on. And it's not Brandon's fault. It was whoever this client was, but I actually asked the name of the client that this Ryan guy was working for to see if I recognized it, and it didn't sound familiar. But yeah, I've never had to do a reshoot. I've had to do minor tweaks in Photoshop, but I've been burned on one job, and that was the one job, and it was shit. Like, how do you shoot a hallway? Like, a hallway of, like, 30 apartment doors.
Dude, I remember telling me about that. I remember you showing me the images, and they were good. There was nothing wrong with it. Based on the criteria for the shoot, is exactly what they asked for. So
I know I showed you the reference photo. I'm like, Tony, here's the reference
photo. I think they're just like either screenshotting and using them for their own purpose, or they're hiring another photographer to come in after and do it, like showing them the images and saying, do this, you know? That guy, which is another topic. You have somebody that does that, right?
Yeah, there's a local photographer that rips off my compositions. And
so, it goes to so you basically them. Have cost sharing enabled, basically the same thing that, you know, I've been preaching to the world, right? And then there's a party that doesn't want to cost share. Instead, they take your photos and they show another photographer and say, do this. And then they go out and
but cheaper.
And they try to go out and do the same thing. The quality isn't as good and the cost isn't as high, but it's good enough for them, right? Did I sum it up basically?
Yeah. The funniest thing is that they don't understand the nuances and they don't understand compression. Like when I shoot something at 70 mils and they go in and try to shoot it at 17, they're like, well, it's kind of close, but it's not really the same. Like, yeah, compression, motherfucker.
Send him a cease and desist. I mean, that's like, there's grounds for copyright.
I've told him, but do you want to spend your time chasing that down? That's a whole nother. That's a whole nother podcast.
No, but I mean, just send a cease and desist just to scare the shit out of them.
I know. It's a whole nother podcast, though. But getting back to the reshoot thing, the reason I bring this up is because I have a set of criteria, and the reason I don't tell people when they ask what happens if I don't like any of the photos, I don't want to give them the ammunition for me to have to reshoot it at no charge. So I leave it up to them and I say, well, we evaluate what you didn't like about the photos and then we'll fix it. You know, we'll reshoot it. So what it comes down to, if it's something out of my control, in other words, if she comes back and she
goes, on her face she doesn't like or something, you know,
well, which I can retouch, but she comes back and goes, I don't like my hair or I don't like my outfit.
That's not your fault.
That's on you.
Yeah.
So guess
what?
Go
get your hair
done. I'm happy to reshoot it, but you're paying for it. You know, maybe she had her hair done, but she didn't like how it looked or whatever. Right. So that's on them. And I always show them. Remember I said I show that image after a couple images in so they can see it. That gives them the opportunity to go, I don't like my hair. I want to fix it real quick. So they can't blame me later and say, well, if you had told me that I had this crazy lock of hair sticking up, I would have fixed it, but you didn't say anything. It's your fault. So that's why I always show them the shots. Like, are you okay with everything? What do you think? And they go, oh, I think it looks great. Hair look okay? Yeah. Blouse look okay? Yeah. Great. Let's keep shooting. So then when we get to the end, if they don't like something and they come back and they say, well, I didn't like this. I don't like any of the photos. I want to reshoot. Great. Why didn't you like them? You know, and they tell me that it's something out of my control, like their hair or their outfit or something like that. Then that's on them. They got to pay for a reshoot, or their boss or whoever is paying for this has to pay for the reshoot. If it's something that I did, if they go, the lighting just looks weird, you know, or my posing, I look awkward. I don't look like I'm comfortable or something.
Yeah.
Then that's on me. I fucked up, you know, and I'll reshoot it. You know, that's never happened. Ever. The only time I've ever had to reshoot is when you fucked my shit up. So it's never happened, but these photos are out there in the gallery right now. I'm waiting to hear back from her. I'm curious to see. I'll let you know next week. To be continued. I'll let you know next week what she says, but it's rare that I don't at least get a photo that they go, wow, that I like that one. Let's go with that one. You know, something that they can use, especially after I edit it. Cause I try to tell them, hey, these are straight out of camera. You know, I use Pixie Set. And I send the proofs and they can make their selection and then they go from there. But, and I retouch that one and that's the beauty. So, but that's my advice to anybody out there who has clients who want to reshoot, find out what they don't like. And this can apply to any genre, whether it's architecture or headshots or whatever. If it's, even if it's architecture, if they go, you know, I don't love this couch in there. It's just not it doesn't fit the room or whatever.
That is not your fault.
That's not your fault. You know, exactly. Or I don't like the way this, whatever staging it is, you know, something like that. That's not your fault. Now, if they go this, it just looks flat or the color's fucked or whatever. Hey, that's on you as a photographer. You're supposed to make it look right. You know,
Any of those technical aspects, that's on you. But anything that's subjective, like, I wish we had to scooch this couch over 3 feet. That's not, you had the chance. You approve. And that's the thing when you're shooting tethered and you're reviewing things on site, especially when shooting interiors or architecture, like my clients are always looking at the camera and they're like, yeah, that looks great. And then they can't go back and say, you know what? On second thought, remember that shit that I thought looked great? I don't like it anymore. Well, that's not my fault.
That's the nice thing about having an art director on set with whatever you're doing. You have the art director, they're looking at the shot, they approve it, they own it after that, right? Mm-hmm. If they decide they don't like the final image, hey, you were there, you had the chance to make corrections. Yeah. Now, 99% of what I do, and Barry, you'll graduate to this eventually where you don't have to have the principal stand over your shoulder on every shoot.
Whoa, wait a minute.
You'll get there. Actually,
one day, one day, one day, one day, my they'll both drop.
Right. So really, it's that they my shoots are so long and boring that they lose interest, and they usually leave after the first shot, so they're not there. But they're not there, so it's up to me to do this stuff. So, you know, things like the couch and composition, I do take responsibility for that because they're not there. But like you say, if the art director is there, then it's on them, and that's a good thing. So if you can get them to stick around, that's great. I consider the art director and like a headshot client to be the same thing. That's your client. So they're there, they're able to make the decision on set. And if they don't, then they own it. So just think about that before you start offering up reasons for refunds to give them ammunition to decide why you're going to do a reshoot or why you're going to refund something. Let them talk first, figure out why they don't like the image. And if it's something that's out of your control, then you need to charge them for the second shoot, you know, or to go back or for your time to fix it. Or in our case recently, when we shot for Hyatt, right?
Oh, God.
Right? They didn't like some of the stuff. They wanted some additional edits done. And it's like, well, hey, we shot to your photo standards. You're asking for stuff outside of that. So you got to pay for that, you know? And that's how it
ended
up. Is
this the same project? Is this the same project where I built CG beds?
Yeah. In fact,
they didn't even notice.
You should do that as a what do you call it? Like a screen?
Webinar?
Yeah, webinar, dude. People would dig that, dude. You should start doing webinars.
Yeah, I maybe people want to know what I could show. I don't know. But while we're on the topic of your headshots, why don't you break down for our audience your headshot lighting setup? Was it four lights, three lights?
I do a main light, which is usually a 5-foot octa, like because I like semi round.
Catch light.
Yeah. And it's also large, and so it just floods with light. And I try to do that, you know, from almost to the side. I'm not up 45 degrees, and I'm not 45 degrees from the front. I'm almost side lit with this. I like
a little
to
harder, a little more dramatic.
Well, it's not hard because it's a huge light source, but it's nice and close, and it just adds a lot of light. It almost looks like a window light coming from a side. Opposite side, I use my baby plate bounce card, which I have a video on YouTube about. The baby plate bounce card is just basically a piece of foam cord with a baby plate attached to the back, shoved in a C-stand. I shove that real close to them, depending on if it's a male or a female, to bounce light into the shadow side of their face. On the background, I usually just use a light hitting whatever background it is, low. And I put
just
it on
the
opposite side of the main light of their face so that I have light, dark, right? So that it's moving across the scene, light, dark. So if I'm lighting camera left side of the face, then I'll light the camera right side of the background so that it's light side of the face, dark side of the face, light side of the background. That's typically how I try to do it. And then lastly, I'll throw a light up as a hair light. I usually use a beauty dish with a grid on it, and this allows me a little bit larger light source, which can pour down onto their hair and their shoulders, give some separation from the background. A lot of people are wearing suits, which are dark, and so you need to separate from that from the background. So by adding that hair light or kicker light, you can put a little bit of rim around the side of their face and their shoulders and make it so that they stand off the background. So how many lights is that? 1, 2, 3 lights and a bounce card.
Solid.
That's it. And I do the same thing every time. I've been doing it for years. And, you know, there's a little manipulation there on how I set the lights up depending on the person. But when they walk in the door, I'm looking at them, I'm evaluating their face. Are they symmetrical? Is their nose leaning one way? Is one eye bigger than the other? All of this stuff so that I know when they walk into the shooting room, I can sit them down and I can start moving lights exactly where they need to be based on what their face looks like.
And how on top of these people, like how close is your main light? Typically
maybe 2-3 feet away. I mean, it's uncomfortably close.
Yeah.
And I tell them that, and I say, you know, I sit down, I'm like, hey, this is going to be awkwardly close. Trust me. It looks good in camera. I try to make this less painful than the dentist. You know, I have all the booze sitting out on the mini bar next to them. And I say, if you need a shot of something, go for it. You know, just jokingly. And half of them are like, it's only 9 a.m. I'm like, yeah, that didn't stop the last guy, you know, so that kind of stuff, you know, so just to kind of, you know, break the ice a little bit, loosen them up, you know, and then, you know, I shoot a few and get my lighting dialed, and when I get one that I think is presentable, then I show it to them just so they can see what they're getting, and usually they're like, oh, hey, yeah, that actually looks pretty good, because nobody likes getting their photo done.
I fucking hate it.
Every single person that walks in goes, just so you know, I don't like my photo taken, you know, but after, when I show them that first one, 90% of them, there's a 10% that still don't, they're just haters, you know, but 90% of them look and go, wow, that actually looks pretty good, you know, and, you know, that's what I'm looking for, you know.
You've taken some test shots of me doing lighting setups that I still use. Well, that are some of the best shots of
it. I'll send you the invoice.
I know that you were using the 70 to 200 for headshots. What are you using right now?
I like it compressed. I like a blurred background. I think a nice compressed lens.
Are you using the 24 to 105 right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the longest I got for the RF. I sold all my EF lenses, so I'm waiting on the 70 to 200 RF to come out so that I can use that for headshots. But yeah, I do like the compressed look for headshots. I think it just looks a lot better. I did move the wood wall from the upper studio to the lower studio this week. So that's available to clients for headshots now. I don't have to bring them into the YouTube studio to shoot headshots on the wood wall. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, if you go to SpokaneHeadshots.com, you'll see that wood wall. That is barn wood that I bought from a reclaimer who goes out, like, tear down old barns. They run the wood through metal detectors and get out all the old nails and all that shit, and then you can repurpose it for whatever you're doing. I bought that wood, and I have a 8x8 wall built with it, and it's in the main studio now, and it's one of my most popular backgrounds just because it's such a cool contrast to, like, stuffy suits and ties and things like that that clients really seem to dig, having that just offset that stuffy feel, you know. So and it's got warm tones to it, you know, so it's worked out really well for me over the years. Yeah, so that's the deal. And I keep a director's chair handy. Some people need the arm to lean on. I always start with just like a stool, so that they sit upright. I don't want people leaning back because then they slouch too much, right? So I use a stool that swivels so that I can swing their knees from side to side, depending if it's male or female or if I want them looking feminine or masculine or whatever. And that all has to do with broad lighting, short lighting, etc. And then I keep the director's chair handy in case I have somebody who I just need to get, like somebody who's maybe on the heavier side, and I want to have them lean forward. I have them lean on the arm of the chair, kind of leaning forward and elongate that neck a little bit. It helps just make them look a little bit thinner. It gets their face more towards the camera. It keeps their body away from it a little bit. When you're using a 7200 racked out to 180 or 200 millimeters, it really starts to compress. Their face becomes the focal point and their body kind of diminishes.
Tony, a lot of people can't help it if their bones are bigger.
And that's why I'm here, man. I'm helped to make flattering photos, dude.
Of bigger bone, of folks. There are folks that have bigger bones.
All bigger. You know, here's the thing. Here's my big deal. Another one of Tony's rants. If you're a fashion beauty photographer and you're shooting gorgeous models all day long and you're making epic images, big fucking deal, man. They're gorgeous to start with. How do you make a bad image of that? Try taking fat, ugly people all day long and make them look good, dude. Whoa. You know, if you can do that, then you're a hell of a photographer. Go get half these fashion beauty people and bring them a 300-pound deuce, deuce and a half, whatever, with frizzy hair and extra hair growing off their face.
We're definitely, you know, getting hate mail this week.
And have them shoot that and make them look beautiful, and then you're on to something.
If there was a governmental committee, we'd be shut down by now, I think.
Dude, yeah, if this was public radio, it'd be over.
It's not easy, man. I'm telling you, that's the challenge, is taking people that are not beautiful and making them look flattering, you know?
What I see with like big people, especially like that, and like people that don't quite know what they're doing, they'll climb up on a ladder and shoot.
Right. Always tell when you go on Craigslist and look at the ads, photographer for hire or whatever, it's somebody up on a ladder looking down because they watched the YouTube video where you have to get them to extend their neck up, you know, and then look down.
Like a giraffe.
Yeah. Right. And that's what they've watched. And so that's what they're doing. And that's what every single one of them does. But that's not the way to do it, man. You don't just have them look up, you know. What's the weirdest shit is when you drive down the road and you see a billboard and the realtors are all looking up, but they're on a flat surface that's above you. It's the weirdest thing. It's like they're looking up, but I'm down here. What's happening? Yeah. It hurts my brain. So it's just photographers that don't know what they're doing. But anyway,
that's hardly most photographers know what they're doing. There's a lot of, I mean, I would say it's a rare thing for photographers to not know what they're doing.
A rare thing for photographers to not know what they're doing.
I'm being facetious right now.
Oh,
that's all. That's why there's tutorials at places like ProEDU. Subtle plug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too bad Gary's not here to plug.
Somebody talk about it. Yeah.
I know. What else we got this week? I got some questions, dude. You want to answer those?
Okay.
I don't know how many I have. There's a couple here. Let me open up
the Pixel Punishers. Hopefully it's nothing too crazy.
So here's a little public service announcement. If you have questions for us, please send them to Pixel Punishers, either on Instagram or Twitter, and not to Barry and my personal page, because when I open up said page, like Pixel Punishers, like I'm doing right now, I can't see the questions that you sent me on my personal page, which makes it very hard for me to answer them. So send them all to one location so that I can see them. So this guy says, relating to last week's discussion of retouching, what would be your advice for getting images for a portfolio when starting out? It's easy enough to get images for practice, but I found people hesitant to extend that use for portfolio, and there are only so many of my own images I can include without things looking redundant. Thanks in advance. You got some insight on this, Barry, when it comes to architecture or real estate. And I actually wrote this character back and I said, what type of photography? Because I don't know if he's talking about portrait or architecture or product or what. And he said mainly hospitality, a tiny bit of residential. So he is on the same path of the type of stuff that we shoot. So how did you go about getting portfolio images to start out?
It's a long story, but I'll try to abbreviate it. So when I was first starting out, I cut my teeth as a real estate photographer, and I thought I could just walk into any model home and just tell them I'm there to shoot photos, and they would let me do it, and they all told me to fuck off. So that didn't go so well. So I came up with a strategy in the shower one morning, and I thought, I'm going to email all the highest-end builders in my market and tell them I'm a student enrolled in an online photography course, and my current assignment is to shoot whatever it is that you want to shoot. And then you reach out to those people. So I found like the 10 most high-end builders, because I didn't want to shoot cookie-cutter homes. I wanted to shoot high-end stuff. I reached out and said, hey, my name is Barry. I happen to be enrolled in this online photography course. I need to shoot architecture and design. I don't require anything from you. I just need access to the home for a few hours. I'll give you all the photos. And if you like them, great. And if not, no thanks for your time. That's how I got my actual start. And then it's funny.
So you lied, like, basically.
You got to lie, cheat, and steal at the start. You really do. But for hospitality, I don't know. Like, go book an Airbnb or book a hotel. You could go book a guest room anywhere. If you know, you could book a decent guest room for, a few $100 and go shoot the shit out of it. No one's going to care. That's one way to build it up for hospitality. I don't know if you can just bust out your camera and lights and start shooting the common spaces. But
you,
definitely
you can ask.
You could always ask.
You can ask, but shooting Airbnbs and shooting, in the room that you booked and stuff, there's nothing wrong with that. You're not branding it with their brand. So if you stayed at Four Seasons and you shot a room and then you put it on your website as
with a watermark,
of Four Seasons down there, then you're implying a relationship, and that's a whole other podcast getting into copyright and trademark laws. But if you don't do that, then you're perfectly fine to use that image. And the same thing goes with like an Airbnb that you stay or something. You've rented the space, you're staying there. There's a reasonable expectation that there may be photographs taken.
You're not
posting the address online or anything like that. Well, there is the issue of having a property release, so getting a property release from the owner, but it has to be a recognizable space.
Doesn't it have to be for commercial purposes too?
If you're posting it to your website, that is a commercial purpose. You're using it to promote your commercial business, yeah. But it's not a recognizable space. Recognizable would be the Eiffel Tower or, a playing field of a sports team or something recognizable. If it's just somebody's home, in Tucson, Arizona or something, then you're absolutely fine. You don't need a model release for that shit. So
yeah, or go shoot a model home. Go, that's how I got my start. Just, and all these model homes are usually their stays from top to bottom, or at least the major rooms. You'll find the kitchen, the living room, the dining room, the master will be staged. So you could go in there and get a handful of portfolio images for you, and then just build on that and then use those images to get more clients. Like, oh, here's some recent portfolio work that I did of this residential space. And then, you know, I think if people don't know that you're not wasting their time and that you know what you're doing, and you can show them, you know, like, here, because you're giving me access to this home, this is previous work I've done, you can expect to get something the same or better. They're going to be like, oh shit, why would we? There's nothing. I mean, all we have to do is open the door and you're in there for a couple hours and we get to have a handful of photos for free. Why not? You know?
Yeah, agreed. And there's something to, you know, the portfolio imagery and people being worried about using it, or do they have to have permissions in this? And like I said, as long as it's not a recognizable space, I think you're going to be fine. So the matter of charging is a whole different thing. And that's where people get into when they're starting out what to charge. They want to charge a low amount so that they can get the job, and then they figure they'll raise their prices later.
No, do that shit for free.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my philosophy as well. Do it for free, because then you're not setting a precedent of a low price. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, exactly. If I shoot Chase's, let's say we're talking about portraits, I choose to shoot Chase and his family in the park for $25 because I want to get his business. I just want to be able to do the job. He loves it. He tells his neighbor, hey, yeah, we had these photos done by Tony Rose, and I give him a call, and they call and they go, hey, we'd like to have our photos done by you, a year later. And you're like, great, it's $200. And they go, well, ooh, wait a minute. Chase referred me. He said it was only $25, you know? You got two ways to answer that. You know, I mean, you can either say, well, I sucked when I shot Chase's stuff, or I'm ripping you off now. Which yeah. is it? I mean, there's not really another way to go about that. You're better off not charging anything, not setting that precedent, yep. just shooting it for nothing. And then when you're ready, you can enter the market charging at a fair market rate, and yep. then you're hitting the ground running. If you want to hang your shingle, that's the way to do it. That's the only way to do it. I don't care what anybody else says. You got to charge nothing until you're ready to charge a fair market rate. You can't charge a lower rate and then try to build up. It just doesn't work, man.
Yeah, it's a hole that you cannot climb out of. No. You can, but it's not easy. And you end up looking, it's like you're fighting with people, trying to prove your value and prove your worth. And they're like, why are you trying to rip me off, man? You did it cheaper for that guy.
But yeah. that's not to say you can't increase your prices in the future, too.
You can absolutely, but it's got to be...
Start lowball and then jack right. it
you're,
up from
you're
there.
Starting at a fair market rate, and then yeah. you're adjusting based on your performance and your demand on that. But you yeah. have to at least be in the fair market. So moving on to question two. It has a couple. Just got the EOS R, former longtime Nikon user. What do you think about using the adapter ring with a drop-in polarizer instead of the Lee filter system?
I don't know. I don't have the fancy adapter. I just got the base EF RF adapter. So I don't know. It's that thing's it's pricey and it looks amazing. I don't know. I don't think there's any issue with it. Do you?
Well, here's the issues that I have. One is that that's only good if you're using an EF lens. If you go to an RF lens, you're taking that adapter out.
This is true. So now you're screwed and you got to buy a Lee filter system anyways.
Buy a Lee filter system anyway. So you might as well just buy the Lee filter system up front.
Because the Lee filter system would probably cover the cost of that adapter.
Right, exactly. So, and they got a brand new system out that's pretty rad. So that's my opinion on that. It's a pretty easy answer. Yep. I'm glad you figured
that
it out.
That makes sense.
Next, corn or flour tortillas. Dude, corn tortillas, they're healthy.
Flour, man. All day,
of course,
man.
You and Chase flour, guarantee it.
No, I love corn.
Come on, man.
I love corn.
All right.
You got, but first, you got to double up the corn. I had tacos.
So that's.
I had tacos at Nito Burrito the other night, and they just fell apart.
Yeah.
All three of them.
But I picked them up. Chronic Taco does double corn.
Yeah.
They double corn.
I wanted to go ring the girls.
I always get corn tortillas, and Chronic Taco here in Spokane doubles them up, but I only eat one.
Do you know how to do the corn tortillas the right way yourself? Not just make them, but like buy them from the store and then put them in tacos. You don't just take a corn tortilla out of the bag and just put your shit in it.
No, I use the tortilla warmer that I got on Amazon. It's this brown disc thing. You throw them in there with a wet paper towel. You put them in the microwave and they heat up and they're delicious.
But they don't have any char marks on them. What you got to do is you got to soak them in water and then throw them in a hot skillet. And that way it chars both sides, but it doesn't crisp them. stays nice and wet. And,
they keep pliable.
But they got some
nice
stuff.
Did you say nice and wet?
All right. Nice and wet, yeah.
All right, I'll try it.
I'm a taco aficionado. Okay. I love tacos.
All right, well, we'll have you over this summer.
Tomorrow's the day.
Tomorrow's Taco Tuesday, so bring some tortillas by. What are your Wacom and brush settings? Before you answer, I think we should just get AK Nacer on the line and have him answer this for the dude, because that's where you and I both get our Wacom settings from initially, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's where I got my baseline settings from.
You have them tweaked since then, but I mean, initially, that's where you got them, yeah?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So let's just do that on an episode. Let's just get Aaron on, and we'll have Aaron Nace talk about the Wacom tablet.
Aaron Nace once said that when I was first starting with my Wacom, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I watched an episode, and the thing that sold me is Aaron was, this is like before they even had Fleur and headquarters, I think he was still doing it out of his apartment, and he said, if my apartment caught on fire right now and I lost every single possession, I would go buy a Wacom before I bought clothes. And I was like, damn, that is serious shit. And then ever since then, I've only edited with, I can't even edit with a mouse anymore. I was waiting to start the podcast tonight. I have my microphone plugged into the computer and I only have a certain amount of input. So I had to unplug my Wacom and I was trying to edit a photo with a mouse before we got online. And I cannot edit with a mouse. It doesn't work for me. It's like a bar of soap.
All right. Tony's running out of the room like a little child that has to
pee. He has to pee. So are we going to edit this out or are we going to keep going?
No, we'll keep going. he wanted me to lead into the Barry's bookshelf to kind of get an idea of what you're...
Oh, man. I'm still on the Holocaust books. Did I get another one? I got another one last week. No, I didn't. The three that I mentioned last week, third one was still en route. The Journey into the Gas Chambers or whatever. But yeah, I'm still on those Holocaust books. And
oh, my gosh. You like the Holocaust?
I don't like it.
Well... you're infatuated by the history of it. I am too. I like the World War II era type of stuff. I love watching all those movies, reading books on that stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Barry's bookshelf is going to be, it's probably going to be Holocaust this week, next week, and maybe the following week, and then I'll be into something else. But
some other genocide.
Yeah, some other terrible thing that's happened in human history.
I just finished not too long ago, and I forgot about this last time we talked about it, but I finished a book called Boys in the Boat about the University of Washington row crew team from like 1939 or something that went to Germany in the Olympics and beat the German team.
Really?
Kind of a history of Washington and a couple of guys that grew up around the Seattle area. That's pretty cool.
The Boys in the Boat.
Boys in the Boat, yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice name.
Yeah, it is a good name. Yeah, I was over in Seattle a couple of weeks ago, and I went and took a look at the boathouse that they had there, the old Skull House, and it had like a whole bunch of information posted up on there, and it was kind of cool to see stuff from that book kind of right in front of me. It was really awesome.
I like Seattle. It's a good place.
Yeah, it's a good place.
Is the gum alley still going strong, or have they scraped it? Is it back to its former glory?
They scrape it, I think, from time to time, and then it goes back to...
Well, it has to, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I'm pretty sure it's a regular thing. They scrape it, and then every asshole comes in and puts their gum back up there again.
Did you tinkle?
It's weird how it just smells. Like, when you walk down there, it just, you know what it smells like? Gum. It smells like gum down gum. There.
Yeah, it's surprising, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Gum and homelessness.
Yeah, and there's spit and gum.
Right around the corner from there, remember that crazy chick that was, like, telling everybody to get off her block, and she was losing her mind?
That's Seattle, man. Dude.
Yeah. Well, there's, yeah.
Seattle and Second, that's over by Target. That's where everything goes down. You got to hang out over there at night. It's awesome.
You can see some shit.
Yeah. So
Barry's still on the Holocaust books.
Yeah, the bookshelf has not expanded in the last week just because
you're obsessed with the Holocaust, dude. People are gonna think you're a Nazi, dude.
I'm not a Nazi. I just I can't believe the things that they did. I don't know, but. Yeah, and it was the Easter weekend, and I haven't read in the last few days, so...
Yeah, why not read a good Nazi book on Easter? What the hell?
Yeah, it seems like a good fit.
I'm reading... So I finished up Elon Musk, and I am about halfway through with the, what is the hell is it called? It's Amazon. It's about Jeff Bezos, man. It's his biography. The biggest store on the internet or something like that. It's
that
called
a huge divorce that he just
the
went
the Everything Store. Jeff Bezos in the Age of Amazon. I'll post a link, obviously, in the show notes. But pretty amazing. He's a hard ass. And what I've been noticing about, like, Jobs and Bezos and Musk, all these guys are total hard asses. Most people are, like, total asshole to work for, but he's a genius at the same time. And so they stick around because of that, you know, because these guys are such hard asses, but at the same time, they're geniuses, you know. And I didn't know it, but Bezos was one of the original investors in Google. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's loaded multi times over. You know, I mean, obviously he's the richest man in the world, but I did not know about the Google thing. There was a lot of interaction between him and Toys R Us and him and Bed Bath Beyond, him and eBay. eBay was their biggest competitor in the beginning. He was really worried about them.
So
tell me, Tony, if you had his money, what would you do?
Anything I want.
I wouldn't get divorced. Holy shit.
Well, he only gave her like a
50% of the of their shares.
So what?
That's a lot.
For I was him? Waiting for the.
Well, he's not even going to notice. It's not like you're going to spend that kind of money. It's not. I mean, you're not going to notice that that's missing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, man. If I was going to do so, the very first thing I would do, like tonight, if I was to like win that kind of money tonight,
just
like,
say it.
Bam.
Just say it.
I would charter a jet and call everybody I know to go somewhere exotic, probably Vegas.
That's
man, I was waiting for an office.
We would
space
all meet in Vegas
bite.
And then go somewhere exotic. Okay. I'm saying no. We would meet there and be like, "Hey, I'll meet you all at Spearmint Rhino, and we're gonna go to someplace cool, some island somewhere, and we would just go and figure out what we're gonna do with all this money."
I'd go to Domino's,
$5 medium pepperoni,
with a coupon. He'd walk in with a coupon and be like, "Hey, I've got a buy one get one." Yeah, no, I'd go somewhere exotic, and while we sat at the exotic place, we'd figure out where we were going to ultimately live and what kind of cars we were going to drive, and I don't know, man, I probably wouldn't be coming back to Spokane, I can tell you that.
Speaking of cars, have you seen that new Koenigsegg, the Yesco? Holy shnikes. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. The new Koenigsegg supercar, named after Christian von Koenigsegg's dad, is the craziest shit ever. It's a 300-mile-an-hour car.
Seems like they're coming out with new cars like every 6 months.
I'm buying a Tesla, man.
Yeah, they had the Agera and then the Ruggera.
They had a Senna, didn't they?
That's McLaren.
Oh, that's McLaren.
McLaren. Yeah, but Koenigsegg has this Yesco, J-E-S-K-O, and it's insane. It has active aero that acts like an air brake, and it's nuts, man.
There's so many rad supercars out there.
That 1-to-1 was pretty cool that they came out with.
Yeah, it's because of the whole things are, everything's carbon fiber now. Like they weigh like a ton.
Mid-engine stuff, carbon fiber, huge rotors for braking. It's all amazing, amazing stuff. But you know what? The interiors on a lot of these they're not very nice. I mean, they're Alcantara or whatever, but they're not, they're just not laid out well and stuff. They're kind of weird and clunky. I don't know.
You want an interior, get a Maybach or something, man.
Yeah.
Tony, do you remember when I took you for a ride in my RAV4? What did you think about the RAV4?
It's a nice unit.
It's a solid unit.
I want a Maybach with Barry driving me around in a Maybach. I just want to sit in the back.
I'm not driving you around.
With my laptop.
Can you have a little hat that he puts on?
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man. That'd be amazing.
I'm never doing that.
You just wait.
I'm never. For the right amount of money, you will.
Next time you come here, he's going to pull up a Maybach.
Guarantee it. If I'm like, Barry, I'll give you $1 million a year to drive my Maybach around. I guarantee you're opening doors for me at McDonald's.
I would do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I do other unspeakable things, too.
Okay, well, on that note, I think we should end this podcast. That's episode 2, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We're sorry we had some technical difficulties. Couldn't get Gary Martin on the phone, but we'll get him next time for sure. We'll get a few others. If you have questions, hit us up at pixelpunishers.com. Chase, where can they find you online?
Nowhere.
You're still incognito?
Instagram. I'm on Twitter too, but I haven't posted anything in like 2 years. But Instagram, Chase_Warnick, WARNICK.
Start posting shit.
I will.
Barry?
You can find me over on the IGs at SWIZZLER.
Right on. And I'm at Tony Roseland on Twitter, IG, and You know, if you go to youtube.com/Tony Roseland, you might even find a couple of videos.
Maybe.
Amazingly enough, that's still up and running. So that's it for this week's podcast, folks. Thanks for joining us for episode 2. Thanks for sticking with us. Hopefully the audio is a little bit better this time. We still have our acoustic panels. We're waiting for those guys to get here to kill that reverb. But in the future, we should be dialed. That's it. Ciao.